Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Buy now, pay later is an extremely interesting and hot topic in the payments industry. Now, while this product begins to mature and change, the fact of the matter is that the buy now, pay later experience is a winner. But it is important to note that while most of the headlines around BNPL are focused on the consumer experience, we know that businesses also enjoy the advancements and experiences that consumers have. So that brings us to today's very important question of how does buy now, pay later translate to the B2B world? Well, to unpack that, I'm joined by Brandon Spear, who is the CEO at TreviPay, and Steve Murphy, who is the director of the Commercial and Enterprise Payments Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of data and insight to unpack on this episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show.
So Brandon and Steve, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here on today's episode where we're really going to be diving into some interesting topics. And I want to start off today's conversation kind of taking a look at a very interesting space within the payments ecosystem. And that's really around the buy now, pay later experience. And we've certainly seen some tremendous and rapid growth within it. And we've certainly got some very interesting data coming from Mercator Advisor Group. And we've got this fantastic chart that takes a look at the projected growth of buy now, pay later. And for those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, we're going to make sure that we put that chart in the article below here. But one of the things that I kind of want to touch upon here is really kind of where we're taking a look at buy now, pay later. The installment loan part of it is nothing really that's new. And I think really kind of what we've seen a lot of change that's seen the rise of adoption of this is that overall customer experience. So I kind of want to take today's conversation really with that lens of kind of the learnings that we've gotten from buy now, pay later and really translating that into the B2B payments realm side of things. So Steve, I want to start off with you, because obviously we know buy now, pay later, certainly a very hot topic in the industry, and we're starting to see that product mature. Now, due to the digital acceleration that we're certainly seeing within the B2B payment side of things, businesses are really kind of expecting to be provided with that B2C-like payment experience. So I'd kind of like to take a look at, as I said, you know, buy now, pay later is not really a new business, but I'd like to kind of take a look at one, what the current state is for B2B payments is from your perspective, Steve, and then kind of what are some of the learnings that we could take from the buy now, pay later space and translate that into the B2B payments world?
Well, embedded in your question is the assumption that since, you know, this has been sort of an exploding payment financing choice for consumers over the past several years, as it is with a lot of the new financial products and services, it's if it's an applicable product for a business, then there's a lag of some variable length before adoption expands into B2B. So there are a couple of reasons for that. And one is the lack of experience with B2B use cases among the programming and entrepreneurial population. So that takes a bit of time to understand. And then, of course, there's the extended B2B sales cycle time, which for consumers is relatively instantaneous, but for businesses is a matter of months, if not years. So you've got that extended ROI. And then you've got sort of the second overall factor, especially as it relates to BNPL as a lending product, is kind of the risk incidence, which is different from consumers, you know, both in size and scale. So the common factor in both scenarios is complexity, since a B2B purchase is predominantly multi-step versus a consumer purchase. And then business financial health is more difficult to assess for a business than a consumer. So BNPL, as you mentioned, Ryan, is really nothing new to business. It's simply another form of trade credit. So think about the classic 2%, 10, net 30 scenario. You might want to think of BNPL as simplified into, let's say, 25% down, and the rest is due over 3 months or something like that. In both cases, the supplier is providing the credit terms, and depending upon their cash flow situation, they in turn might be outsourcing the financing of that receivable and paying some percentage flat fee or, you know, in the upcoming scenario, as interest rates are starting to rise, maybe some other pricing dynamic going forward. So the next logical expansion area for BNPL is in small business, which is what we're trying to see, which is what we're starting to see now. Since many cases, there's just not enough credit history for a bank, for example, to provide a credit card standing line of credit to a small business. As such, there's demand for installment terms on the buyer side. And if the cost is acceptable to the supplier, allows for some, you know, flexible method to generate sales. So in terms of the experience, suppliers want to make this payment financing choice on the part of the buyer is a really easy one with little friction. So for a very small business, that means something similar to consumers since they behave pretty much the same way. The developing area is as you move up in the business size into the middle market, lower middle market, where demand will be more vertically targeted, but the experience will need to be flexible. It's going to need to be mobile and it's going to need to be fast. So how far that model may expand into that market remains to be seen. It's going to depend upon working capital strategy and market conditions, as well as the best way to pay decisions for which sophistication is really growing as digitization takes further hold in all these financial processes. So let's leave it there and back to you, Ryan.
Excellent. No, I really appreciate that in-depth review there. And one of the interesting things that I think you brought up there, Steve, was obviously that frictionless experience and kind of the enablement of that. So, Brandon, that's where I'd like to really pull you into this conversation. And maybe you could kind of tell us from your experience here at TreviPay, how is it then that organizations could be able to provide that frictionless experience to businesses?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And Steve, thanks for doing a really good job on setting the context for where BNPL fits overall. So I think there's a couple of key points that I want to build on that Steve made. So, you know, one of them is the reason BNPL has been so successful and there's been such a big adoption of it in the consumer world is that it is a very simple and frictionless process. I mean, if you think of in the past, if you were buying a large capital item, you know, a piece of furniture or something like that, a couple of $1,000, and there was a credit process you had to go through at the store, that was typically several hours of a process to basically go through it and determine if you could actually make the purchase or not. And obviously what BNPL has done is completely compressed that time down, and you're typically getting a decision in, you know, less than a minute and know whether you can make the purchase or not. So there's very definitely a tremendously enhanced consumer experience around that. I think if you think about how does that then translate into the B2B world, and Steve touched on this, there's a couple of additional challenges that do make the adoption of this more tricky. So the first one is, as Steve mentioned, it's not as easy. There isn't the notion of a credit score per se like we have in our consumer lives, where it's really easy for somebody who's providing the funding to get comfortable with the end consumer and know that they have a high probability of repaying the loan. And that doesn't really exist in the B2B world. So you have to gather as much information as you possibly can from, and it's usually more information than you're typically getting from a consumer, where, you know, outside of something like a social security number, you don't need a whole lot of other information from the individual to underwrite them. The second challenge that you have, and it's similar to the consumer world, but it's increasingly common, is this idea of business identity theft. As more and more of the commerce shifts to an online transaction, something that's happening on a marketplace, something that's happening on an e-commerce website, we're seeing a very significant rise in businesses or bad actors to pretending to be either a part of a real business or actually trying to overtake, you know, the email addresses or hack elements of that company's infrastructure to be able to apply for lines of credit like this. And so it's really challenging and difficult at times to, you know, particularly if you're trying to have this frictionless experience for an end customer, for an end business customer, to know, you know, firstly, is this a real business? is the person who's representing the business actually a part of that company? And then secondly, are they actually empowered to bind the business for something like a loan? And in the consumer world, that's all one entity. You know, Steve mentioned this. There isn't this multi-step process where you have to confirm, is this person allowed to, you know, make the purchase? You know they are in the consumer world. They're representing themselves versus somebody who's representing a company. So there's all kinds of additional challenges that very definitely flow from the, from the way you have to underwrite and the way you have to determine if an application is real or if an application is fraudulent. The other point that I would definitely make on this is, you know, again, in our consumer lives, the purchasing of capital items, big expenses tends to be something that occurs less frequently. In the business world, it tends to occur, in a more commonplace way. And so, one of the things I think that doesn't necessarily translate as well into the business world is that BNPL is probably really only applicable in a capital purchasing scenario where, you're buying 20 laptops for your company and you don't want to pay that entire invoice in a single month. You want to spread it over 3 or 4 months. But it's not the sort of thing where you're likely to, use that as a replacement for the trade credit where you've got 30-day terms to pay an invoice from the vast majority of your other suppliers. So I think the use case is probably a little bit narrower, and there's also very definitely complexity around trying to create that seamless B2C experience because of all of those issues that I mentioned.
So Brandon, just you had mentioned fraud. So I guess my question would be, when you think about a B2B e-commerce scenario, is there any endemic difference between perhaps a BNPL purchase or a card-based purchase where you have sort of PCI standards and so forth? Do you see any fundamental difference or risk related to BNPL? And is that one of the things that the merchants are going to have to account for?
Yeah, it's a great question, Steve. So I think the fundamental difference really is the dollar magnitude of these transactions. So in a consumer world, you're buying one Peloton, one television set, one sofa. In a B2B world, we've seen transactions try to come through where you're buying 20 laptops and it's $45,000. So the magnitude of the transactions is the size, the scale is just materially different. Obviously, the suppliers love it because the average order value is, probably much higher than what they might typically see. But there's a lot more inherent risk in trying to validate whether that's a fraudulent application or not. And the other potential challenge with it is it's not just about obviously in the consumer world, there's often ways to do a multi-factor authentication. Credit card companies have gotten very sophisticated with sending a text message to your phone or saying, this is an unusual transaction, would you confirm it? So although it's a card not present type of transaction, you're still trying to close the loop and validate that the person who owns the card is actually affecting the transaction. Way more difficult to do that in the business world, where you potentially have got multiple individuals that can buy off of a company's credit line. And so you don't have this one-to-one relationship between a credit line and a purchaser. You typically have a one-to-many relationship. And so that also gets, that further compounds some of the complexity of this.
Yeah, I certainly like the analogy there, Brendan, or that you're talking about from the fraud aspect of it's kind of hard from a business perspective for the multi-factor authentication here. It's kind of hard to go to a business and say, hey, put your thumbprint here so we can authenticate you. There's no
exactly.
One individual.
Who is it? Is that the CFO's thumbprint? Is it the CEO? Is it, was it the individuals that are actually doing the purchasing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And those are all valid questions there of how do you say, well, this is the person of authentication. And then if that person leaves or goes elsewhere or anything like that, how does that information get translated and saying, nope, okay, here's the new biometric or whatever the case may be from a fraud perspective. But Brandon, I know that you're talking a lot about kind of the challenges that are here, right? But I do kind of want to look a little bit past the challenges here and take a look at process of implementation here. So potentially that's kind of what technology exists that to make buy now, pay later more efficient and secure than the traditional trade credit that we were talking about. Also, how does what we're hearing about from the consumer buy now, pay later different from the buy now, pay later for business offerings that are out there? And then also, what does this look like for accepting buy now, pay later for businesses? So I know a bit of a mouthful there, but curious to kind of get your thoughts on all those.
Yeah, so I think one of the key themes here for sure is that there's access to more data than there ever has been in the past. You know, more and more data repositories are available, accessible via APIs. It's one of the key things that's basically powered the rise of buy now, pay later for consumers, is that you can really quickly and easily plug into all of these different data sources and underwrite somebody in near real time, so that at time of checkout, they can potentially apply for credit, get a credit line, and conclude their purchase with the new line of credit that you've just given them. So those same sorts of interconnections exist and are available for a B2B type transaction. But by the way, I think they're also available for trade credit. I don't think it's unique to buy now, pay later. The sorts of things you have to do for BNPL are very similar if you're trying to modernize and digitize the way you deliver and offer trade credit to your clients. So I think the underlying infrastructure there is the same. In terms of what I think is different between consumer BNPL and business BNPL, we've spoken a little bit about it. Steve touched on it. You know, business BNPL is a multi-step process. The purchasing process has many different stakeholders. There's the person doing the purchasing. There's perhaps a subject matter expert. There's somebody who owns the budget. And typically, how do you make sure that that process is followed? I think what that leads us towards is what Steve alluded to, is BNPL for business is more likely to gain traction in smaller companies, where the person doing the purchasing is also the finance person, is also perhaps the owner of the company. And so in a smaller business, they operate and feel a bit more like a consumer. There's perhaps a single individual that is doing all of those things, versus in a much larger company that would be separated into four or five different departments, even not even individuals within those departments. So I think that does lead you down a path that I would expect BNPL for business adoption to happen first in the SMB customer base, because it's more consumer-like and you can get to it more easily. And then I think the last thing in terms of accepting BNPL for businesses, for suppliers, the fees associated with this are significant. They are typically somewhere between 1.5 and twice what you'd be paying for a credit card. And so if you're a supplier, if you're interested in this, I think you have to do the math to basically confirm, validate that you expect your average order size to go up significantly, because that's the reason this has worked in the consumer world, is that average order values have increased. And so paying the additional fee, the additional 2x transaction fee, is something that suppliers have gotten comfortable with because the AOV goes up. If you're in the sort of business where that perhaps is not true, like if you're selling a subscription or something that's not, you're not going to buy 10 or 20 or 50 of them, then it may be less applicable to you. So I think the industry you're in, how you think about your average order sizes, all of those things are relevant when you think about, is this the right sort of offering for you to have to your customer base?
So Brandon, just sort of adding on to that, I think your point about data is important because, when you think about the whole working capital scenario and how the pandemic has sort of crystallized the importance of cash, there's decisions to be made on both the supplier and the buyer side. So you would think that the buyer, in terms of their days payables outstanding, are going to have some additional information from which to make a decision about whether or not, the best way to pay. And that includes the actual payment type, as well as whether or not they want to do any financing terms. And then on the supplier side, you know, they have to figure out whether or not the increased order value is worth it versus the cost of accepting and so on and so forth. So is that something that you're seeing in your experience, that these firms are using data and the BNPL experience is really taking advantage of that?
Yeah, I think that's a true statement, Steve. And, you know, so I'll give you some examples that will hopefully be, you know, be valuable to the listeners here. So, you know, on the one hand, if you have customers that are buying, you know, repeatedly from you. So, for example, if you're a manufacturer and you have resellers, let's think of that use case. BNPL is very unlikely to take hold there, because you're typically not going to give up a 5% margin for somebody who's going to be doing replenishment of stock inventories. You're not going to typically do that. Your average order size is unlikely to change, and it's going to be repeat business. And so why would you, you know, move those off of, you know, your typical trade credit terms where you're getting paid every 30 days and you're getting paid by a check or via ACH, which is a much more cost-effective transaction fee. So I think in a use case like that, BNPL is very unlikely to penetrate that category. If you are somebody who sells laptops, for example, and you want to try to target the SMB customer base more directly, and you know that customer is probably not going to buy laptops from you every month, but they're going to buy laptops from you, you know, twice a year, and then they will replenish those laptops every 3 years. I think that's an interesting use case potentially for BNPL, because you allow your customer to, instead of buying, you know, one laptop a month, they can buy five laptops this month and pay you over the next 3 months. And I think that, you know, it's valuable, it's useful for the customer, for the end customer, because they probably get to buy everything that they actually need. But it's also valuable for the supplier, because they can pull forward that purchase. And if, you know, and the risk, if you don't get all five laptops today, is that they might go buy the other four laptops from a competitor. So if you can get the five today, that's a win. That's why you would potentially consider it.
Yeah, I mean, another thing I was trying to get at was kind of the digitization of the sort of the end-to-end financial operations. So if you look at procurement systems, e-procurement and so forth, you know, to date, at least I'm not aware that in any of these big procurement systems that they've actually built in BNPL scenarios. So I think that's another area of opportunity going forward.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They definitely haven't. I mean, the you know, so the way this gets solved today is you kind of have to shoehorn it in. You know, you send four invoices. You don't send one that's got, you know, staggered payment terms. But you're absolutely right. I think there's definitely something there to kind of, you know, more efficiently connect how the buyers are going to buy and the systems that they use for AP if they're buying on a, you know, using a BNPL offering.
Yeah, no, Brandon, before we wrap things up here, you know, I'd love to get kind of your boots on the ground perspective here and maybe kind of some, a little bit that feedback loop of what you're hearing from some of your clients at TreviPay are kind of saying as they're kind of moving forward with this implementation.
I think the general feedback that we get is you know, similar to what we've been talking through here, which is, you know, you have to do the analysis first and validate and confirm exactly which segment of your customer base you're going to target this to. I think once you make that choice, once you make that decision, once you kind of do that analysis, then there's, you know, there's really good technology choices, service providers that can help you execute against those strategies. Obviously, if you think about implementations per se, these are much easier to do if you're implementing them at your e-commerce store, because, you know, generally plugging this in as a payment type into the e-commerce store is probably the easiest implementation to do. If you think about the most difficult implementation to do, it's like doing this at a physical checkout, you know, in a physical store where you've got to have an integration to the point of sale. So typically what we see happening is, from an implementation point of view, this tends to start with an e-commerce deployment. And then ultimately the next step might be moving to a salesperson-led deployment. And then, you know, the last phase might be moving it to a point of sale integration.
So I guess it's still early days, Brandon, but you know, are you seeing any differences between business sizes or vertical segments with regard to, you know, either actual adoption or interest in adopting?
Yeah, really great question. So, I think the bottom line is it's still really early days. A lot of the customers that we talk to have not necessarily decided to deploy BNPL yet. I think they continue, you know. So for example, if you offer 60-day terms to your clients as part of your trade credit solution, a lot of those sorts of customers, I think today feel, you know, well, we're there, we're offering that today. Why would we want to do anything different than what we have today? So I think this, you know, how this will likely unfold is, you know, as companies change their go-to-market models, as they try to target new segments or new customer bases, and they might uncover categories where BNPL fits well, where there's a customer segment that doesn't have the cash flow and wants to spread the, you know, wants to buy something, but wants to spread it out over a longer than 30, 45, 60 day period. I think the other thing that's going to be worth watching is as interest rates rise over the next, you know, year, maybe 2 years, you know, you made the point that, you know, cash was king during the pandemic, but cash was also the cheapest it's been in decades during the pandemic. That is going to all change in the next 2 years. And so I think the customer segment that's likely to get squeezed the most is going to be the small business. And as a consequence of that, I think there's going to be more and more demand from that category of buyer to have more choices, have more optionality, and be able to spread their payments out more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be prime rate plus. They better be ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll end things on that note there. So Brandon, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking with me. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right. Thanks.